Guys, we made it. We made it to the month of March. As I check my old handy-dandy watch here, it says March 1st. And with March comes madness. But not necessarily the madness you're thinking of. I'm talking about the madness in college football. And don't let the less informed fans out there fool you into believing that just because it is March that there's nothing to talk about in the world of college football, because, guys, I'm looking at my outline here and what all I want to talk about on this show, and I don't know how I had enough. There's not enough room on this paper for what all I want to talk about tonight. It is a busy time of year in football. I heard there was an incident at a Starbucks in Indianapolis. I have no idea what that's about, but I encourage you to go look that up on your own time. And also, like, between you and I, did you see the news out of Oxford, Mississippi? It had nothing to do with Lane Kiffin. It had nothing to do with the Ole Miss Rebel football team. But it was an incident involving the Greek life. I'll put it that way. Not going to talk about that on the show. That's also for you to look up in your own time. But it is quite hilarious. I will say that. Welcome into the show, the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. I believe it's been a while since we last spoke. I believe it's been about a week. That sounds about right. I wanted to get y'all a show earlier, about Monday or Tuesday or so, but the week got really busy and I didn't get the chance, but it doesn't matter. We're talking to you now. But make sure, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast over at The Game Nashville. It's wherever you get your podcast, whether that be Apple, Spotify. Make sure to subscribe to The Game Nashville, and there you will find every episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. And also, if you haven't already, please follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter or X, whatever you call it. I'm also on Instagram at Parker_Kelly10. I would really appreciate a follow, because you'll get all the inside information on what is going on with the Air Raid with Parker Kelly. It's a fun time. It is a fun time in college football. I would argue that the springtime can be almost just as busy as the actual regular season. And let's go ahead and dive into the show, shall we? We've been rambling long enough, right? Rule changes are coming to college football. Let me repeat. Rule changes, and I'm not talking about the playoff, although playoff changes coming. We're not talking about that on tonight's show. But actual rule changes that have to do with a game, they're coming to the sport. It was reported on ESPN.com that the NCAA Football Rules Committee is proposing several different rule changes. The main rule change they are proposing is a timeout be charged whenever medical personnel enter the field to evaluate a player after the ball has been spotted for an ensuing play, meaning after the play has ended, the team lines up to get ready for the next play. Boom, a player goes down. What do we refer to this as? It has been pretty popularized, especially this season, among the college football community. We refer to this as faking injuries. This has become an epidemic, and not a good one. Not a good epidemic at all, but This rule change is actually pretty interesting, because I've kind of been stewing on this idea for quite a while. As it has stood, at least for this season and whenever faking injuries became a thing, if you went down for an injury, you just had to miss one play and you could come back in the very next one. That doesn't discourage faking injuries. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and put this out there before I dive any deeper. I hate faking injuries. I hate that it's a part of our game. I believe when Kirk Herbstreit said on a broadcast earlier this year when he was talking about faking injuries, he referred to it as unethical. I'm 100% in agreement. It's terrible. I hate that we're even having to talk about this right now. I hate that we have to talk about a lot of things that are affecting college football right now. This doesn't mean I have ill will towards college football, because I don't. It's the greatest sport on the face of the earth. I just hate some of the outside factors that have crept into the game. And hopefully one day, if I'm elected college football commissioner, I will help get rid of them. But that goes without saying. I've been thinking about this for quite a while. They're proposing this idea of, okay, if medical personnel have to come out onto the field after the ball has been spotted, you're going to be charged a timeout. I like that. I do. What if the team doesn't have any timeouts? Well, that team will be charged a 5-yard penalty for a delay of game. I also like that. Now, growing up, this was a very simple thing that we all learned, is sometimes life isn't fair. And sometimes one person can kind of ruin the fun for everyone. I remember learning that in elementary school. One person can ruin it for everyone. If one person misbehaves, sometimes the whole class will get punished. That's just kind of how it is. Well, now that faking injuries have become a thing from team to team, this kind of stuff has to be enforced now. And that is just a consequence of the faking of the injuries. Now, obviously, this proposal is not final. This proposal is going to be sent to the schools, and then it's going to go before the NCAA or the NCAA Playing Rules Oversight Panel for possible approval in April. I like the idea of the team being charged a timeout, because I think it would quickly solve the issue of faking injuries. I think it would get rid of it pretty quickly. I'd like to maybe take it a step further. What if you made the player, in addition to losing the timeout, what if you made the player sit out the possession, or maybe even sit out the quarter? I think that would eliminate this issue completely all at once. Because obviously, if the player's not really hurt, they're not going to want to willingly sit out of a game, especially if it's close or it's a game of high stakes. I think that charging the timeout, because a coach doesn't want to lose timeouts, timeouts are key, and making a player sit out either the possession or the entire quarter, now we're talking. I think that would eliminate the issue very quickly. And it's really, really simple, that because obviously there's no way of telling if a player is legitimately hurt or not, because we have some pretty good actors out there in college football. But if you're actually hurt, just stay down and wait for medical personnel to attend to you. Even if you think you can get up and limp off, just stay down so you don't get accused of faking an injury when you're actually not faking the injury at all. Just stay down. But I also think that these rules that are being proposed, there are some more great ones that I have to read. It's not just the faking injuries front, although that was the main portion of it. The Rules Committee is also proposing limiting timeouts in games that reach a third overtime period or longer. Now, this rule was proposed because of what happened in, if you remember, the Georgia Tech game this year that went into 8 overtimes. Now, after the third timeout, after the third overtime, each team has a timeout. But it significantly delayed the game when teams keep using their timeouts. I like this rule as well. I want to be very blunt about the new overtime rules. I can't stand them. I can't stand the new overtime rules. And here's why. When I look at the new overtime rules, like, okay, first overtime, you start at the 25, You score a touchdown, you kick an extra point, each team gets a possession. Okay. But then in the second overtime, if you score a touchdown, you have to go for two. And then when you get to the third overtime and beyond, it just becomes a shootout of two-point conversions. When I look at these rules, when I hear these rules, when I watch these rules be played out in an actual game, it's like they were written by a 7-on-7 director. I mean, shouldn't we make overtime somewhat of a challenge? This the new overtime rules were implemented after the LSU-Texas A&M game, the famous game that went into 7 overtimes, in hopes of shortening these games so that we never got to a point where it was 7 overtimes. Because I remember that LSU-Texas A&M game, and I think it went until like 2 in the morning. But with the introduction of these rules, they were trying to shorten the overall time of the game. Well, I hate to break it to you, but you didn't get what you hoped for, because Georgia Tech went into 8 overtimes the Friday after Thanksgiving. And then, let me refresh your memory, in 2021, Penn State hosted Illinois, and that game went into 9 overtimes. So if you were hoping to shorten these games with these new overtime rules, you didn't necessarily reach your goal here, because games are still going on. In fact, they're longer than that 7 overtime game in which Texas A&M and LSU played. So that is just a couple reasons why I don't like these new overtime rules. I think that we should make it somewhat challenging by making them drive the actual length of the field in overtime, or at least making them start from the 50. Making them start from the 25 is way too easy. And I think the whole just shootout of two-point conversions is kind of ridiculous. But anyways, I digress. I like this rule of limiting the timeouts in games that reach a third overtime or longer, because that could shorten the game where it's not dragging out like we saw in Georgia Tech. Listen, I did a top 10. This was really early on when I first started the podcast, but I did an episode of my top 10 games of the college football season, and Georgia Tech, I believe, was number 2, right behind Oregon, Ohio State. Now, a lot of you hear me say that and think I'm crazy, because Georgia Tech was awesome, and it was until we got into those new overtime rules, because it just kept dragging on, and it was just like it was ridiculous with the whole two-point conversion shootout. So that's why I had it number 2 behind Oregon, Ohio State. Now, another proposal that was brought up was allowing offenses to reset the game clock within 2 minutes of each half when a defense commits a penalty for too many men on the field that participate in the game. Now, you could probably guess this is known as the Dan Lanning rule because of what happened at the end of Ohio State, Oregon. Oregon ran 12 men out there on the field. Ohio State ran a play, and time ran down, but Oregon actually had 12 men on the field. I thought it was brilliant on Dan Lanning's part, because it was a loophole around the game, and it ended up helping Oregon win the game 32-31 over Ohio State. Now, I don't necessarily like rules that are targeted at specific teams or games, and what I mean by that is I don't actually remember anybody else doing this outside of Oregon against Ohio State. So I feel like this rule is specifically targeting Oregon, and it is. But this is a loophole around the system. So if you're wanting to provide more clarity to the game, I guess this rule does that. I don't necessarily have a huge issue with it. I'm not like super staunch that I love it or anything, but it does provide more clarity. And I'm kind of iffy on that rule right now. The fourth proposal that I read, which I don't have an issue with this one. This rule would propose that a whistle could blow a kickoff return dead anytime the returner makes a T signal with their arms. Now, if you watch that Illinois-South Carolina bowl game, this issue was brought up because if you remember that heated exchange between Brett Bielema and Shane Beamer, they got into it over this. It was a nasty exchange, but this is why this proposal is being brought up, because that's what sparked the debate between the two head coaches. I don't have a problem with this. I like that rule. So I think that could definitely be good for the sport. You know what else I think is good for the sport? CFB, now this was reported a while back, but college football is getting a new enforcement arm, and it's not the NCAA. Now, it's an unnamed enforcement arm. This was actually reported by Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports, who I'm going to continue to plug his work because I truly believe he is the greatest in the world at what he does, and that is reporting college football. He's doing an excellent job, and he's been all over this. But the college football is getting a new enforcement arm that is basically going to do everything the NCAA has failed to do, and that is enforce the rules. Now, many coaches were skeptical at the start when this whole thing was proposed, but many are beginning to think that this is actually going to work. The national complaint has been lack of rules or clarity regarding what the rules actually are. But again, we're not sure yet what the name of the entity is, but they are going to serve as an enforcement arm that actually enforce the rules. It's a very simple concept, but they are poised to implement significant penalties to teams that violate a variety of revenue shared related rules. This includes a restriction in the number of transfers that a program could add, which is a big deal. This includes millions or potential millions in financial fines, a reduction in a team's future revenue sharing pool, and multi-game suspensions for coaches. Again, these are all potential punishments for teams that fail to abide by the rules. And if you remember, we're starting July 1st, teams, or should I say schools are going to directly pay their athletes. They're basically going to have a cap of $20.5 million, and they are going to pay their athletes. And that was a result of a huge house settlement with the NCAA. So because there have been lack of rules, lack of clarity, coaches, teams, it's the wild, wild west, and it's basically been a free-for-all, coaches and players and tons of people have been complaining because they don't know what all is legal and what's illegal. And sometimes the NCAA has come after teams and players that have done something that they believe is wrong, but the NCAA hasn't come after the other teams that are doing the exact same thing. It's all a mess. But what this enforcement arm is doing is they're creating rules in this new era of the house settlement ruling that allows schools to directly pay their players, and they're going to enforce the rules. And this isn't just going to be a slap on the wrist. This is going to be standing their ground. You break the rules, there is a severe punishment that comes. We could limit the amount of players you bring in through the transfer portal. We could suspend your coach. We could fine you. You can do all these different things. And I think this will be really good for college football because rules, some people have a misconstrued vision or, a misconstrued vision of what rules actually do. Rules don't necessarily limit you, but I think about it this way. When you're driving on the road and you have red light, green light, you have lanes that you're supposed to stay in and you can't go outside the lanes, you have don't turn left signs. Without those rules and without those guidelines, it would be a mess on the roads and it would be a hazard to drive anywhere. Right? So in college football, now that there are rules, coaches and players have a little bit more structure. And I believe with structure comes peace of mind. And there hasn't been a lot of peace of mind among some of these coaches. There hasn't been a lot of peace of mind among a lot of these coaches. I mean, Matt Rhule is talking about canceling his spring game, which is going to happen, by the way, because he's worried about other schools messing with his players and tampering. It's the wild, wild west. And I'm very thankful that somebody is actually doing something because the NCAA hasn't done anything for a long time. You know, used to be, I remember growing up watching The Blind Side. And do you remember that scene where the NCAA was interrogating Michael Orr? When I watched that, my view of the NCAA was they're basically like the feds. Now, you can do whatever you want. You can sue the NCAA. You can take them to court, and you're going to win. You can do whatever you want to them. I'm glad somebody is finally stepping up and enforcing the rules because it's going to be great for the sport. Now, I think this is a perfect segue in the next thing I'm going to talk about because I mentioned the house settlement that allows schools to directly pay their athletes. With that, and I talked about this I touched on it very briefly in the last show, and it may have been hard for the audience to catch because I didn't really necessarily talk about it too much, but I'm going to talk about it now. With this house settlement and allowing schools to directly pay their athletes, now these schools are going to have to come up with ways to get more money in order to pay their athletes. Texas just announced recently that they're going to raise their ticket prices for season ticket holders. And it's going to increase $13 per game in order to meet these rising costs of college football. Texas has never had a problem having deep pockets. But now that they're having to pay their athletes, and also they have $30 million in new costs, they're going to have 200 new scholarships next year that are going to cost about $9.2 million. And to throw on top of that, you got to pay your athletes now. Even schools like Texas, who have the oil money and the deep pockets, they're having to find ways, creative ways, in order to make this money so that they can pay their athletes. This is the new world of college football. The University of Tennessee did this, and athletic director Danny White, he introduced a talent fee that basically it's a 10% increase on ticket costs. In order, so Tennessee can pay their athletes starting on July 1st. And whatever your opinion is on this, whether you like it, dislike it, whatever, I know the fans aren't happy about having to pay more money in order to go to these games. I get it. I am a fan as well. I like to go to these games. I have to pay money out of my own pockets to go to these games. I get it. I don't like it either. But this is what the schools have to do in order to pay their players. It's just the new world of college football. Now, I told you that I was going to talk about some new hires, and Oklahoma made a slam dunk hire the other day. It was announced that the Oklahoma Sooners were hiring Jim Nagy to be their new general manager of their football team. Now, depending on how in touch you are in the world of college football and the whole process, the whole draft process in the NFL, you've probably heard of Jim Nagy. That's because he was the director of the Reese Senior Bowl. And I know here at 102.5 The Game, it is draft season, and it has been a very busy time for our station, and we've been talking a lot about the Reese's Senior Bowl, and that's because it has become more popular over the years, and a huge part of that is because of Jim Nagy. I've listened to several interviews with Jim Nagy, and I can tell you that just by listening to these interviews, now I've never had the pleasure of meeting him, but I can tell in these interviews that he is one of the most passionate people about what he does. And he is the reason the Reese's Senior Bowl is what it is today and how big of a success that it has become over the years. That is a large part because of Jim Nagy. And Oklahoma, in what they've been under Brent Venables, they need a little bit of a spark, especially considering what their season was last year. Going 6-7, their offense couldn't figure it out, which has not really been a problem at Oklahoma for a long time. They needed a spark, and I believe that this was a huge spark for the program. Jim Nagy, I am a huge advocate for him, and I believe he's going to do great things down there in Norman. We're going to talk a bit about Oklahoma's schedule and upcoming shows because you remember all the talk about Florida's schedule going into the season last year. That's Oklahoma's schedule coming up, but we're not going to talk about that on this show, or at least on this episode. We'll get to that a little bit later, though. Would you believe me if I told you that USC had the number one overall recruiting class? Maybe if this was 15 years ago, 20, you would believe me. No. They have the number one overall recruiting class, not in the Big Ten, but in the entire country. And this is according to 24/7 Sports. Right now, they have 7 4 stars committed and 4 3 stars, and they are the number one recruiting class in the country. Now, the question for me was never, can USC get verbal commitments? That's never been an issue for USC. What the problem has been is dragging those recruits across the finish line and actually getting them to sign their national letter of intent and report for spring practice and maintaining those recruits until the season. That has been the issue with USC. Now, I am 23 years old. I was alive for the Reggie Bush days, but I was very young. But what I can tell you by just like going back and watching USC from back in those times, USC was a force. And honestly, USC doesn't really have an excuse to not be a force in today's day and age. Because what is one thing that we have in college football that we didn't have in college football 20 years ago? And that is NIL. If you think about the location of USC in Southern California and who their head coach is in Lincoln Riley, and the resource pool that school has, there's no excuse for USC not to be competitive. Now, has it been great under Lincoln Riley's tenure so far in Southern California? Not necessarily. Do I believe he is taking the right steps in order to get there? Yes, I do. I have not sold my Lincoln Riley stock. I still believe that he can get that program headed in the right direction. Offense has not been a problem at USC. What has been the problem? Defense. He went out and he hired Danton Lynn, who was the defensive coordinator at UCLA, a crosstown rival. I believe that was the right hire. He's made some great additions to the defensive coaching staff. I believe he's trying to get everybody on the same page. Now, when it comes to USC recruiting, again, you got to consider their location in Southern California. A lot of the greatest high school athletes come from California. USC has been meddling in the South, in Georgia, in Florida, in Texas, and places like that to try to get recruits. But in my opinion, their main focus should be where their feet are in Southern California, because again, there are a lot of great recruits in Southern California. So they should focus on that specific area of the country. And obviously, if you can get recruits in Georgia and Texas and places like that, they should absolutely 100% do that. But they're going to have a hard time competing in that specific region of the country when they're going up against schools like Florida and Alabama and Georgia and Miami and schools like that. But why not focus on the kids that are in your backyard? Get them to commit first. Get them to see the vision of your program and build from there. That is what I believe has been the struggle with USC recruiting. But, as I said, they have the number one overall class as it stands right now. The key is going to be getting those kids across the finish line, and we'll see where it goes. Again, I haven't sold my stock in Lincoln Riley. I think he's pushing all the right buttons to get that team heading in the right direction. And we'll have to see where it goes from there. Quick sip of green tea. The weather has been fluctuating quite a bit here in Nashville. It literally went from snowing last week to, I believe it touched the 80s earlier this week. But the change in weather has got my congestion all over the place. But we move merrily along. Green tea has my voice feeling pretty strong. I touched on last show field storming, and I talked about that. Now, this time of year, many folks have what I like to call bracket brain. You can probably guess what that means considering what month it is. And while this is a college football show, I am very, very in tune with what's going on in the world of college basketball. So, Georgia beat Florida on Tuesday of this week. It was a huge upset. One of the biggest upsets in Georgia basketball history. And I thought this was an interesting note, because if you watched until the end of the game, the Georgia fans waited 90 seconds before storming the court to avoid a $100,000 fine, which I thought was absolutely brilliant. I didn't even know this was a loophole. I thought that if you storm the court in general, or you storm the field in general, you get fined, but I didn't know that if you waited a minute and a half, you avoid a fine. I thought it was brilliant because, again, I didn't even know this was a thing. So kudos to the fans. I will say, again, if I'm ever elected college football commissioner, I'm going to abolish fines for field and court storming, because if you want to celebrate a big win, go right ahead. Go right ahead. I have no issue with it. But I also understand where Dennis Gates, who's the Missouri head basketball coach, I understand where he's coming from, because you storm the court and you get fined. You got to remember the world we're entering into, where schools are directly going to be paying their athletes. They're going to need that money. They're going to need every penny they have to pay their athletes in this new world. So I understand why. But again, if I'm college football commissioner, I'm gonna abolish the rule. I'm going to abolish the fines. You're not going to get fined if you storm the court. Storm the court. Have fun. Celebrate. That's what this is about. I don't have a problem with it. Now, time for some not-so-good news. This has been a pretty popular topic considering our geographical location here in Nashville. But Tennessee, it was announced in Knoxville earlier this week that cornerback Ricky Gibson plans to enter the transfer portal. Now, clearly, nothing is official until he actually enters his name into the transfer portal because the spring portal window is not open yet. But if he actually does enter, this is a big-time loss for Tennessee because he was a starting corner opposite side of Jermaine McCoy last year. Ricky Gibson played very well. And what was the highlight of, or what was one of the better parts of Tennessee's football team last year? And that was the defense, specifically that defensive line. That defensive line had a huge impact on why that defense was so successful. And I would also argue that the production that they were able to get out of their linebacker room, as well as some of their secondary pieces, like Ricky Gibson, like Jermaine McCoy, who they acquired out of the transfer portal, and their safety play. I think that it was a bit unexpected, or probably a better word would be some of their key pieces in their secondary were unproven. That's probably a better way of putting it. Ricky Gibson was an unproven guy. A lot of Tennessee fans, a lot of college football fans, a lot of people who covered the team didn't necessarily know what he could be because we didn't see a whole lot of what he was until this last year, and he was very solid for the Volunteers. But if he actually enters his name into the transfer portal, this is a huge loss for the University of Tennessee. Secondary depth is already pretty thin there, and if you lose a starting corner, that is a big-time blow to the team. But, again, the defensive line was great, and the University of Tennessee had some players step up this year on the defensive side of the ball that we didn't necessarily see coming. So, again, if Ricky Gibson decides to actually enter his name into the transfer portal, that allows room for somebody else to step up and make a name for themselves. Will Brooks was an excellent example. Safety at Tennessee. Many didn't even think he would be a starter coming into the season. And he was not only a starter for the season, but he was arguably one of the better players in that back end of the Tennessee defense. So, obviously, you don't want to lose a player like Ricky Gibson. Again, he could just be vying for more money through NIL. He could just be bluffing. Who knows? But if he actually decides to enter his name into the portal, it's a big loss for Tennessee. But to put a positive spin on it, that allows someone else to backfill and make a name for themselves on the defensive end for Tennessee. Now, one more note that I wanted to bring up, and this is more so I saw this news and my face lit up, but Penn State has made another hire on their coaching staff. They have hired former Nittany Lion quarterback Trace McSorley to be their assistant quarterback coach. Now, I've had the opportunity to meet Trace McSorley. I attended the Manning Passing Academy back in 2017 when Trace McSorley served as a camp counselor. I've had the pleasure of meeting him, and he is a phenomenal guy. Now, his career may have not panned out in the NFL the way he had hoped, but this is a phenomenal avenue for a guy like Trace McSorley to be able to go back to his roots, go back to his old stomping grounds, his alma mater, and help Penn State try to win a national championship this year. Because Drew Aller took a huge step this year. But as we all kind of saw pan out in the playoffs, Drew Aller probably has another step to get to, another level to climb before we could consider him elite. Trace McSorley has an opportunity to work with an excellent young quarterback. And I believe there is no better person to help Drew Aller than arguably one of the most successful quarterbacks in Penn State football history. And I'm very happy for Trace McSorley. Certainly wish him all the best there at Penn State. Told you it was going to be a jam-packed show. We covered so much on the air raid today. Make sure, if you haven't already, please subscribe to The Game Nashville. There you will find every episode of The Air Raid with Parker Kelly. And also, please follow me on Instagram and Twitter. I can be found at Parker_Kelly10. We really appreciate you listening, and we're going to have another episode for you here within the coming days or so. So stay on the lookout for that. But again, appreciate you, and can't wait to talk more college football soon.